Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. We are here. It's Thursday, March 14th, 2019. It's been 3 days since we did an episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. And in the ensuing 3 days, the NFL has turned pretty much upside down over the course of the last 72 hours. Much has changed. And joining us to break down what has happened and what is perhaps going to happen next is our friend from The Athletic. It's Lindsay Jones. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
I was going to say good. That is my default. As you know, as someone who is grading free agent signings for The Athletic, I am in grade hell, as are you at the moment.
Yes, exactly. It's been a crazy couple of days. It's funny that actually the 24 hours since official free agency started on Wednesday has been significantly slower than the previous 4 days.
Yes.
It's just very odd given what you would expect. But yeah, those first couple days, I mean, even really over the weekend when the trade started happening with Antonio Brown and then moving into Monday and Tuesday, it was just go, 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 go.
Yes, it was stunning. I was up to 5 a.m. the night where Odell got traded at 8 p.m. And then I was literally I was finishing my column and I'm I'm tired, but at least I got this done. I'll get to there was the D4 trade. I'll get to that and I'll go to sleep. And then as I was filing it, it was Le'Veon Bell signed. And I'm great. This is going to be a fun night after this. We will get to Le'Veon in a minute, but you wrote about the Odell Beckham trade for The Athletic. And I think we have relatively similar thoughts on it, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so too. I think it's a slam dunk move for the Browns. I can't believe that was all that they had to give up. Mm-hmm. I know I had some Giants fans kind of back in my email and in my mentions and stuff talking about, well, at least they got draft picks back and they got Jabril Peppers. And yes, okay, fine. But you also gave Odell Beckham a $90 million contract just 7 months ago, including a $20 million signing bonus, and then basically gave him away for some mid-round picks and a decent versatile safety / special teams player. Odell Beckham is not just any player. He is a generational wide receiver talent, one of the most marketable, best players in the league. And you gave him away after giving him a massive contract less than a year ago. I mean, that is just a stunning move. You just don't see that happen. I mean, the Antonio Brown situation was surprising enough that they gave up a guy, but he's 30, he's 31. You could kind of see this stuff building up over a couple of years.
Sure.
You knew that his contract stuff was going to come up sooner rather than later. But Odell Beckham, this was less than a year ago.
Right.
And the message that the Giants are sending about where they are as a franchise and what direction they're heading, I mean, it just makes no sense at all from the Giants' perspective about why you do this now and the way that all of this came together.
Mm-hmm. So that's the part that confuses me, right? If you want to trade Odell Beckham, I don't agree with you, but that's Dave Gettleman's prerogative and that's what he wants to do. That's one thing. But why sign him to an extension 8 months ago? What changed between your thinking then when there was certainly conversation that Odell Beckham might get traded at that time and in the months prior to him signing that contract, as opposed to just letting him play at his fifth-year option, franchising him, which they didn't use their franchise tag this year anyway, and then trading him now, where you wouldn't have had to pay him $21 million in dead money. You wouldn't have had to eat $16 million in dead cap on your cap this year. Not that it matters, because they're going to end up being a mediocre team this year anyway, but you get the idea. Why would you think he's worth that extension then? And then for an offer that is okay. I mean, I talked about this last night on the Twitter show we did with Field Yates and Adam Schefter. It's not as if you would imagine this offer was a one-time deal where nobody was willing to offer the Giants a first and a third round pick and a competent safety who has been honestly a little disappointing from the start of his career over the first two seasons in Cleveland as I think a late first round pick. Could the Giants really not do better of that offer in the past? Was this they were blown away? Because if not, then what changed to make them make this deal?
And it's not if they're talking about how, he was going to become a distraction and his behavior and all of this stuff, nothing changed since the end of, or from last season, and especially since the end of last season, to before when you gave him the contract. Mm-hmm. And I remember last year at, it was at the owners meetings just a couple months ago where, you know, there was something else that happened and John Mara was talking about, you know, they're disappointed and they wish that he would do things. You just gave him $90 million and a $21 million signing bonus. Mm-hmm. If you weren't happy with the way that he was behaving, then you don't give him that money up front at that
right.
point. I mean, I'm a parent of a toddler. I mean, I negotiate with an unreasonable person all the time. And if my daughter is standing in the middle of the kitchen saying, I want candy, I want candy, I want candy, and I just give her candy, then she's going to keep asking for candy. Mm-hmm. And I want to also be very, very clear. What Odell Beckham's behavior or antics or whatever, these are not big deal things.
Right.
These are, you know, kicking, you know, having a fight with a kicking net and maybe throwing kind of a temper tantrum that, you know, frankly, wide receivers do on mm-hmm. a very regular basis. He's not out getting arrested. He's not getting DUIs. He's not involved with any sort of like legal law enforcement issues. There's mm-hmm. not, you know, these are not like the big major scale issues. These are a lot of, you know, okay, headaches type of stuff that maybe franchises like the Giants believe that they shouldn't have to deal with because they're the Giants. Mm-hmm. But these are not these massive issues that some other players around the league where, you know, teams will kind of decide that a player is no longer worth those headaches. But they reinforce whatever the minor things were, the, mm-hmm. the diva-ish type of behavior, by giving him that contract when they did last year.
Yeah, and I don't, like you said, it's not like things changed. It's not like he was a model citizen and then suddenly was, you know, was a nuisance. Like, he did some stuff that was, again, like, a little obnoxious, perhaps, you might say, but not like, I think there's been because the trades happened in such a relatively similar period of time, you sort of naturally conflate the Antonio Brown situation with the Odell Beckham situation, and they're two totally different things. Antonio Brown, who I think maybe some of the stuff has been overblown, but like did not basically show up for a Week 17 game. That is something pretty significant when it comes to your team's on-field performance. You know, was at odds with his teammates, was calling them out on social media. Odell Beckham didn't do any of that stuff. I mean, there was never any suggestion that he was, you know, there was that one, I guess, interview where they asked him about Eli Manning and he said basically, like, you know, I wish I could play more of a role. I wish I could, you know, get the ball downfield more frequently. I don't know if that's Eli's fault. I don't know whose fault that is, but I'd like to do more. Like, that's not offensive. I mean, that's just reality. That's just looking at what's happening. And Odell Beckham is not wrong for saying any of those
things.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I don't understand, like, there's nothing Odell Beckham has done, even if he's done minor things, that compares to what Antonio Brown did. So I don't understand what changed.
The only thing that I could potentially think that if there was what changed now is they saw what happened with mm-hmm. Antonio Brown, where his, you know, it all escalated mm-hmm. to the point where it became very clear that Antonio Brown was going to refuse to play for this team and that if he was still under contract that he wouldn't come back and that he was going to become more and more and more of a problem. Mm-hmm. And he basically forced his way out to the point where they only got a third and a fifth back. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a sense of, okay, this could happen down the road. And if we can get a first and a third and a former first round pick player for him now, we do it. Mm-hmm. I still don't like it, but that's maybe they were trying to look down and say this could snowball. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe Odell has seen that you can force your way out of a situation that you're not happy in. And then, you know, as the team, then you're basically left getting whatever you can get for it, which in this case for the Steelers was a third and a fifth. I still don't like it if that's what happens, but maybe that's one thing that could have potentially had some thinking back there. But it still doesn't make any sense to me.
That's the best argument I've heard so far. I mean, that's the most logical thing I've heard so far in terms of why they would trade him. So I congratulate you on that because I couldn't even wrap my head around that point. I couldn't get that far. But in terms of the Giants, yeah. We'll finish up here. We'll get back on to the rest of the free agents here in a moment. In terms of the Giants' perspective now, the trade's done. Like, we can sit here and debate it. We've debated it. There's no taking it back. The Browns are not going to take back. They're not going to give them back Odell Beckham for a first and third pick and Jabril Peppers if the Giants change their mind. They can't Anthony Barr their way out of the situation. What happens next for the Giants? If what could happen in the next year, we could sit here and say, oh, wow, it looked like they were in a really sticky situation and now they're in kind of okay shape. We're kind of happy. Like, what has to happen during the rest of this offseason for the Giants to make this work?
Well, I think you have to come in or out of this offseason with a very solid post-Eli succession plan. Mm-hmm. And if you are the Giants, this, I mean, this feels like it's going to be another kind of wasted seat. You've committed to Eli. Eli's going to be here, whatever that situation. But now you have number 6 and number 17. Mm-hmm. Can you somehow move up? Do you want, is there a way that you can go get Dwayne Haskins and make him, I mean, he's the best quarterback in this class, make him your long-term answer? You drafted Saquon Barkley last year saying, okay, we've got this feature piece of our offense. But until they come out of this offseason, or next offseason, but you need to freaking do it now, Giants, with your quarterback plan for the future. Because nobody is buying that Eli is going to, this is no longer a team that has any playoff aspirations. I mean, mm-hmm. look, you've already moved on from Landon Collins. You miscalculated that decision right there. And now you've traded away your most dynamic passing weapon, you mm-hmm. know, so what's left? I mean, at this point, you really just need to start building for the future, and it has to be, they have to figure out that quarterback situation. And can you get one of the best quarterbacks in this draft class at 6? I don't know. I don't know if you let Dwayne Haskins go, you let Kyler Murray go. Are you okay getting Drew Lock at 6? Is he the guy that you want long-term? I don't know. Maybe you package picks now and try to get up higher so you can get Haskins.
The idea of Drew Lock at 6 made my stomach turn a little bit. I know, right? If I'm being honest.
As someone who is married to a Mizzou fan and has watched a lot of Drew Lock's games from early in his career, it's bonkers to me too. But people do crazy things for quarterbacks this time of year.
That's very true. People do crazy things. All right, Lindsay, well, we covered Odell Beckham. Let's get to the rest of the free agent moves here in a second. But first, want to talk about our pals at SeatGeek. Because now, hey, if you're a Browns fan, tickets might have been pretty easy to get in years past. Not, you know, I can't blame you. I would not have necessarily wanted to go to a lot of Browns games in years past anyway. But there is an exciting team in Cleveland this year. There are plenty of exciting teams. Oakland suddenly has some talent to work with Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams. A lot of different situations that we might have seen a few days earlier when we first started recording these free agent podcasts. And you may want to get tickets to games you were not expecting to want to get tickets to games to in the past. And goodness is, whether it's the NFL, whether it's Bryce Harper playing with the Phillies, for example, any sport, any concert, any theater event, anything you need tickets to get into, you can get tickets with SeatGeek. We use SeatGeek every single day here at the Bill Barnwell Show. I say we, I mean me, because I am the host of the show. I think it's my official title. I use SeatGeek no matter where I'm going, whatever I want to buy tickets to, the first place I look is with our friends at SeatGeek. And very often, it's the last place I look, because I'm getting a great deal. And even better, I've used SeatGeek many times before. If you haven't used SeatGeek before, here is your chance to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase, whether it is $10, whether it is $1,000, 10 bucks off. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter in promo code Barnwell today. It's my last name, Barnwell. Promo code Barnwell at checkout gets you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. You mentioned misguided in talking about the Odell Beckham situation. And that brings us to the other big signing, perhaps, in the last few days. The biggest free agent signing, I think, of this period in terms of story, certainly, and in terms of buildup, is Le'Veon Bell, where, in the long run, it seems like, I don't want to say he was wrong about his decisions in the past. He sat out a year, turned down the Steelers contract. But I think if you sat with him a year ago and you said, hey, you're going to get to free agency and your offer, then when the offer you're going to take, the best offer on the table, is going to be 4 years and $52.5 million, I would imagine that he would have been disappointed.
I think so, too. I mean, I think that was certainly a calculation that he would give up the money that he would have made last year playing for the Steelers under that franchise tag, that he would make up for it, if not exceed it, once he hit free agency. And the running back market has just not transpired that way. I think you can make arguments both sides. Yes, it's a financial loss for him. He's never going to make back that money that he missed out on last year, that he forfeited when he sat out that year. But it was, you know, given his injury history, you know, I don't think he's ever played an entire season. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of wear and tear in his body. He will be fresh coming in. You know, he did exert some control in a league where players never have any control. He mm-hmm. kind of did something that might end up benefiting other players at other positions who maybe will be in a position to cash in better than he was because of the position that he played. So I think, you know, I think there's been a lot of takes out there in the last 24 hours or so where some people are saying, oh, Le'Veon Bell's a huge loser in this situation and how much, look at how much money he could have made. I think there's people who still would say that, you know, he still did the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I think you can see both sides of that.
Yes.
But yes, I think that the contract is less than what he would have wanted it to be. But in the same sense, he did get to ultimately pick where he wanted to go. He did get the best running back deal that's on the market this year. Mm-hmm. And it's just bizarre the way it all played out, though. Like with the whole mixtape and doing it well after midnight on the East Coast time, right after the Odell Beckham trade was. Because like the New York Jets were always the landing spot, at least yeah. over the last couple weeks. I mean, basically coming out of the combine, it really felt like the Jets were going to be the only place. And, you know, maybe his agent didn't do enough to kind of drive up his market elsewhere. Maybe the Jets were ultimately ended up, you know, bidding against themselves and to really get the max type of deal that he probably envisioned several months ago. He needed multiple teams to be bidding for him and the running back market just wasn't there that like they probably anticipated it was going to be. But with the fact that the Jets were already kind of bidding against themselves, it was odd that he did this whole like, who should I choose? And I can't decide. And I'm going to drop it in my mixtape. And he lost the back pages. I mean, if he was always going to go to New York, you got to time this right to like make the really big splash. And coming right after the Odell Beckham, I mean, just as we're doing right here on this podcast, he's the second biggest story, kind of by a big margin right now in the biggest media market in the country.
Yeah, it's so strange in that he was going to be this enormous thing, and then like the Antonio Brown trade happened. So the Steelers are, you know, it's like they're heartbroken about losing Antonio Brown. And oh yeah, also that guy we had last year, who was a really good running back who didn't play all season, he's leaving too. He's been almost an afterthought in a strange way from the Steelers side of this coverage. And then in terms of the fit with the Jets, I mean, obviously they needed to add pieces around Sam Darnold this offseason. They had a ton of money to spend. They spent on both sides of the ball. Do you think they've spent wisely in adding Bell and adding the other players they've added? And do you think – let's start with that, and then we'll get to Anthony Barr in a second.
Sure. I mean, I think they absolutely – I mean, they had the second most, I believe, money to spend outside of the Indianapolis Colts heading into this offseason. So they had to spend the money. And, you know, they didn't break the bank with this Le'Veon Bell deal. It's not like this insane contract. I mean, I think it's fine. I think it's a good contract. And Le'Veon Bell is so different than any other running back that was available on the market right now in that he's so valuable in the passing game. So he's the type of running back who will be so valuable to Sam Darnold as he moves into his second year because of all of the different ways that he can help an offense. And I think Adam Gase is creative enough of a play caller that one of the things that I've always really liked about an Adam Gase kind of offense that is he's so good at getting players into space and all the different kind of route combinations that you can do in the middle of the field and all the different formations and all the different kind of bubble screens and all that kind of stuff that you, I think Le'Veon Bell will be a really good fit there in terms of kind of a guy that they'll be able to find some good matchups. He'll be a really good third down kind of passing game option for Sam Darnold, which every rookie or young quarterback needs that. So I think the fit is fine. I don't know if it was maybe could you have pictured him as a better fit with the Colts and Andrew Luck, maybe, or, you know, I was always kind of a little intrigued of what he would be like in a really interesting creative running game with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. But I think of all of the realistic options that they had available financially and scheme-wise and all of that kind of stuff, I think the Jets is a fine fit.
Yeah, I do too.
Your take on it too.
I think it makes sense. I mean, we saw the Ravens kind of come up in midday. There was that conversation where the Ravens were, you know, rumored to be in the running, and then the Niners showed up late, and the Niners were going to be in the discussion. They signed Tevin Coleman. We'll get to that maybe after the break here. But, you know, I thought it was the most logical fit for a while now in terms of not only a player who wanted to end up in a particular place, but also just a team that, you know, they couldn't go out and sign an Allen Robinson or a Sammy Watkins to improve their wide receiving group because there weren't those guys on the market this year. The biggest wide receivers were Tyrell Williams, whose market didn't really develop all that much. Golden Tate, who's still out there. I mean, there just wasn't a lot to work with. So they signed Jamison Crowder, who I think is a very underrated receiver when healthy. Another guy who you brought up, for example, a good third down receiver to give Sam Darnold some easy throws, some short completions that he's going to turn up field and make plays with. And they shelled out a ton of money for C.J. Mosley, an inside linebacker. Basically, you know, just spent more than whatever Baltimore was willing to spend to bring in a guy who might be on a Hall of Fame track at inside linebacker. Not even really a position of need for the Jets. You know, they didn't really need an inside linebacker, but just went out and added a superstar and then tried to add a second superstar in Anthony Barr, who thought about or signed with the Jets, at least on a handshake deal on, I believe, Tuesday night. Then Wednesday morning, he woke up and said, I don't feel great about this, and then went back and signed with the Vikings. Now, I don't know about you. This is just my personality. I think I would be so embarrassed to like be like, oh, I don't want to do that, that I would just uproot my life and live in New York for the next 5 years just because I would be too mortified to not to go back and be like, oh, actually, I didn't mean that. Sorry.
No, I'm the opposite. I would be so afraid of having like made the wrong decision, and I would be okay going back because I mean, I guess it comes up. This happens like what, once a year, maybe once every 2 years. I mean, it still comes up from time to time with like the Frank Gore to the Eagles type of thing, but it's not like it's followed him necessarily around.
Right.
So, the Josh McDaniels thing, but that was a little different situation. I think.
Yes, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think I don't know if I love like the legal tampering period, but it does give guys a little bit more time to consider things. I wish they would allow visits during the tampering period because mm-hmm. I think guys that are actually now maybe waiting out the first, you know, the guys that have waited out that initial very first rush, they're able to actually like go to facilities and meet with coaches and see where the facility is and what they're going to, you know, where they could potentially be living and, mm-hmm. You know, what the training facilities look like. I think you can maybe make some better long-term decisions for your life and your career when you have the ability to do that. So the legal tampering period has given you the time to actually kind of weigh offers and go back and forth, but I don't think it's gone far enough. And we shouldn't fault players who don't want to rush to commit to, you know, such a major decision when they haven't really been given all of their options.
Yeah, I think it's tough for players because they feel the pressure of, oh, you know, the biggest deals are going to come out the first day of free agency. And if I have, you know, four teams that are interested in me and I say, oh, I need to think about it, two of those teams might sign another player at my position. And then suddenly, you know, I'm down to two teams and they don't have to make as big of an offer. I don't have to be, you know, I don't have that same sort of flexibility. So I think there is pressure on, you know, players to make decisions quickly as well. And Adam Schefter made a good point yesterday when we were doing that Twitter show, which is that, you know, in the past there was conversations before free agency and then free agency would start and then 20 deals would come in. And now it's changed in that, you know, the legal tampering period is essentially the beginning of free agency. And then the scouting combine and the conversations you have at the scouting combine with agents and teams is when negotiations start happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anybody who thinks that like this legal tampering period has ended all tampering is just, you know, completely foolish because I mean, these conversations have been happening. They were happening at Prime 47 at 2 o'clock in the morning in Indianapolis. They were happening at the JW Marriott Starbucks at 8 a.m. You know, in Indianapolis, they've been happening via text message and everything over the last couple weeks because, you know, they know what the market is. Their agents around the league have a pretty good sense of who's going to end up where. I mean, there's a reason why a lot of people were very confident that Le'Veon Bell was going to end up in New York, mm-hmm. you know, at the start of this week when he didn't actually, you know, let everybody else know until way later.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I think there's some ways that they could probably perfect this thing to make it so that a guy like Anthony Barr doesn't have to be embarrassed about backing out or doesn't have to, you know, kind of have this stigma of like, oh, he changed his mind. And, mm-hmm. But we're getting closer to a better system, I think, but I think there's just still some things that they could do to make it better for everybody involved.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I do appreciate we should do at some point just a tour of Indianapolis through places where combine things get negotiated. If you've been there and you've been there for the combine, you know the places to go where stuff is happening. But we're going to hit a break and come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell, VSPN, still joined by Lindsay Jones of The Athletic. We are both in different places, actually, grading all of these free agent signings and trades. And I'm going to start with another player who I don't understand some of the logic behind this move, and I want to see if you can explain it to me. Nick Foles to the Jaguars, where yes, the Jaguars needed to upgrade a quarterback 100%. I understand, makes total sense to me. Getting rid of Blake Bortles, again, on board. No need to justify that to me. Why did the Jaguars have to pay Nick Foles $22 million a year, about, if not more when it comes to incentives, and guarantee him over $50 million when there are, to my knowledge, I'm looking at the chart here, zero starting quarterback jobs open besides the Jaguars job?
Yeah, that's another situation like we talked about with Le'Veon Bell and the Jets. Exactly who are they bidding against?
Yes.
And, I saw somebody out there made an argument that they have to pay him. If you're going to bring him in to this complicated locker room or whatever, you have to pay him starting quarterback money. You have to guarantee him all of this that, you know, not only does he feel valued, but the rest of your team knows that we are investing in this guy to be our starting quarterback. I mean, I don't know if you necessarily have to give him $50 million guaranteed to do that as well. The only really other kind of open starting quarterback job right now is at the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
They have not officially moved on from Ryan Tannehill yet, but that's the only other team where you can say, okay, this job is really kind of up in the air right now. So did they think that maybe the Dolphins were going to get involved? I mean, did the Dolphins do some good bluffing in those bars in Indianapolis that they were also going to go after him? But, you know, at this point, kudos to Nick Foles' agent for going out and, you know, getting him that kind of deal when there really wasn't, you know, just this huge, huge market for him. You know, maybe the Jags only watched the 2017 playoffs. Maybe they just watched tape.
We know.
And didn't watch the bad games.
Yeah, we know Doug Marone doesn't watch the Super Bowl, so he did not even catch that game from Nick Foles.
Well, hopefully somebody at least gave him a highlight.
Yes. Hopefully he watched the YouTube clips of the Super Bowl where Nick Foles was very good. I think the Dolphins could be possible, but I don't think that's even really their job is technically open. But in terms of Nick Foles, you have John DeFilippo as the OC in Jacksonville, who's your quarterbacks coach when he won the Super Bowl. Jaguars, we know they have a great defense. They were a competitive team as recently as 2017. The Dolphins are rebuilding. The Dolphins are just in a place where they just lost the right tackle, Juwan James, to the Broncos on an enormous deal. They just cut Danny Amendola, who went to the Lions. They lost Frank Gore at running back. I mean, they're a team that is in transition quite clearly. If you're Nick Foles, even if the money's equal, even if the Dolphins are paying you more, I still think you go to Jacksonville. So I don't know what could have happened.
Yeah, I know. I think so as well. And look, it was pretty clear that he was leaving Philly. I mean, it would have been one thing if he had been under the franchise tag or they had, it was clear that he was going to be a free agent and he was leaving and he was going to seek the best deal and best situation possible. Maybe not the wisest investment of money from the Jaguars, but I think we've probably said that multiple times about multiple players and contracts that the Jags have handed out. I mean, they had to shed a bunch of contracts to pay Nick Foles this money. I mean, they had to cut Malik Jackson and Tashaun Gibson. I mean, guys who were, big free agent signings for them just a couple of years ago, basically to clear up this kind of money. And, they have their quarterback now that they think will be an upgrade from Blake Bortles. I think that's a fair assumption. They now cut Blake Bortles, who's now out looking for another job. He hasn't signed somewhere since we've been on this
I hope not.
Podcast yet, right? It's fine. It's a fine fit. We'll see how they kind of operate together in a Doug Marone kind of conservative offense. Are we still going to see a lot of those, the stuff that they did well with John DeFilippo in the 2017 postseason, all those RPOs and I don't know. It can't be Philly special anymore. I don't know what we're going to Duval special.
Duval special. I love it.
It is a little bizarre that, he got that massive deal without a bidding war.
Yeah, it does seem interesting. When you think about what Tom Coughlin wants to do on offense, it seems like from all the moves they've made, they want to run the ball. They want to rely on their defense. They want to not turn the ball over. And John DeFilippo just got fired from the Minnesota Vikings for not running the ball enough to Mike Zimmer's liking. So there's going to be an interesting fit there. I don't know if they can make it all work. And obviously, in a vacuum, yes, Nick Foles is an upgrade on Blake Bortles. And I think the Jaguars are in better shape at quarterback. But the path they took to get there, I have some questions. I'll just say that. In terms of...
And there's still questions about their running game right now.
Of course.
How Leonard Fournette's long-term future there and... So it's going to be a team to watch for sure. I think the reporters who are in Jacksonville are in for another year of drama.
That is certainly true. All right, Lindsay, let's get to more of the free agent conversation in a second. But first, let's talk about a new sponsor today on the show, and that is Trip Actions. And guys, there's a reason half of business travelers do not use their company's chosen travel management platform. Booking business travel is still ridiculously outdated, time-consuming, and costly. You may go to an airline site, see a great deal. You don't see it in your company's portal. That's frustrating. A hotel you might seem like a great deal. Get a more expensive deal in your company's business travel platform. Nobody wants to deal with that. So if you're frustrated with your company's travel management platform, or lack thereof, perhaps, you need to look into TripActions, because they take the pain out of corporate travel with a complete solution that helps businesses save money and keeps employees happy. Seems like a win-win for both sides. It works so well because TripActions is the first travel management platform designed from the ground up with the road warrior in mind. It's not bloated. There's not things you're not going to use. There are things that your company and your employees are going to use reliably and consistently. It's easy to book your company's travel from the desktop or on their app, with 24/7 proactive support around the globe and incentives for employees to save on travel expenses. Companies large and small, like Lyft or Sara Lee's Frozen Bakery, for example, see over a 90% adoption rate, and they save up to 34% on travel spend when they use TripActions. And you can reshape your company's business travel today with TripActions by going to tripactions.com/Barnwell and completing a 30-minute demo with a TripActions account executive. For that, you'd figure it might be worth checking out. You're also going to get a $100 Amazon gift card. That is a great deal. $100 at Amazon. It's for this month only. And if you head to tripactions.com/Barnwell, again, a free demo and a $100 Amazon gift card. tripactions.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. In terms of the safety market, that was the position that seemed to be the deepest heading into this free agent period. And it seemed like, because there's so many of them out there, well, they'll probably end up, you know, kind of reducing each other's market. There's not going to be that many big deals to go around. Well, that didn't happen. Everyone got paid pretty much except for Ha Ha Clinton Dix, who seems to be the last guy left without a chair in this game of musical chairs. But I'm going to give them the list to you, and I want to figure out which one you think is the best fit of player, and whether it's financial, whether it's personnel, whether it's just where he is in his career. I want to know what you think. So we have Landon Collins to Washington on the biggest deal, at least on paper, 6 years and $84 million. Tyrann Mathieu to the Chiefs, Kenny Vaccaro to Tennessee, Adrian Amos to Green Bay, LaMarcus Joyner to the Raiders, Earl Thomas to the Ravens, and then Deshaun Gibson to the Houston Texans. Is there a favorite for you of those G7 contracts signed by safeties over the last week?
Okay, so it's the seven safeties.
Just the seven.
I really like Adrian. I do like the Adrian Amos to Green Bay move a lot. I actually kind of gave it an average grade, and I had some people commenting saying, like, do you like this or not? because, you know, I think he's going to fit really well there, and I like that he's, I like that they're taking away a strength from the Bears. If you're, you know, if you're the Packers, that's a good thing to do if you want to get back, try to get back in control of that division. And I think the market was okay for him. I mean, I think the average salary, I think he's what, going to be $9 million, about averaging $9 million a year. So not quite the crazy money that we were seeing for Landon Collins, some of these other guys. Earl Thomas waited, I guess my other favorite is Earl Thomas to the Ravens. The Baltimore desperately needs like a new face, a new leader of that defense after losing CJ Mosley and Eric Weddle and Terrell Suggs in the last week. And Earl Thomas is the perfect guy to build your defense around now. He is going to be the guy who's going to completely set your tone. Yes, he plays on the back end, but he's going to be the guy that every other player on your defense is going to follow. He's obviously following in the really strong safety legacy that they have there in Baltimore. And I think the money makes sense, too. He didn't break the safety market. I mean, he's actually came in under what Landon Collins is making, which makes a little sense because he's 5 years older than Landon Collins.
Right.
But I think he is still such a special... You know, I used this word earlier about Odell Beckham, but he's a generational type of talent. I mean, Earl Thomas does things that nobody else in the NFL can do. And so I think he's a tremendous signing for a team that needed him, and I think the value there is good.
Yeah, I think the Ravens absolutely needed to add something because they just were so hit by free agency in the first 4 days of this period. And it's a new GM in Eric DaCosta who's been there forever, but, you know, this is his first free agency period. And it's the first time he doesn't have Ozzie Newsome there to rely upon or make the calls or make the final decisions. And, you know, I think there's, I don't want to get into the optics too much, but you can imagine, like, just how's that going to look if you're, you know, you're shedding talent, not signing anybody. And you don't want to sign someone for the sake of signing someone, but to sign a player of Earl Thomas's caliber at a major position of need, well, you know, you don't feel as bad if you're the Ravens or if you're a Ravens fan. You feel like, okay, we have, at least we're not just trying to shed talent. We have a plan here, on the defensive side of the ball. And I think, you know, look at the numbers for Earl Thomas. I mean, it's still staggering just the difference between what the Seahawks defense was like, even over the last few years where he was not his, maybe his old self because of injuries, but just they're a totally different team with Earl Thomas on the football field, and you figure that's also going to be the case in Baltimore with the Ravens. You mentioned Adrian Amos going to the Packers. That is so interesting to me because they dipped their toes in free agency last year. They signed Jimmy Graham. Didn't really work out all that well. Muhammad Wilkerson got hurt. They re-signed Tremont Williams, who ended up playing free safety. Now they bring in Adrian Amos to play free safety. And they spent a ton of money on the second day of free agency. They signed not just Adrian Amos, but Za'Darius Smith is making something in the range of $17 million per year. That's actual money, at least for the first 2 years of that contract. Preston Smith, who was, you know, a decent player for Washington, not a great player necessarily, over $16 million a year, I believe, in that ballpark. Billy Turner, who was a backup with the Ravens, a guy who washed out of Miami, I believe, you know, the backup for the Broncos until this past year. He filled in at right tackle and left guard, I believe, and then was, you know, pretty decent, but a guy who has not been, you know, thought of as anything besides a, you know, replacement level backup at any point in his career until last season, gets $11 million in year one. I mean, is this turn for the Packers something you think is for the better? Or do you think that the old ways of drafting and developing and avoiding free agency are the way the Packers should have gone in 2018?
I think you can do a little bit of both. The one thing about what they did, I guess was it the second day of free agency, Tuesday, when they kind of made that big investment with the two pass rushers and Adrian Amos, was did you need to do both pass rushers, especially when you look at what this draft is? I think there maybe could have been a better balance between let's sign Za'Darius Smith and then you've got two first-round picks, and this is a really, really deep draft when it comes to defensive line. I mean, one of the deepest defensive line drafts we've probably ever seen, and you could probably have good value there with either of your two first-round picks to get a guy at a much cheaper price tag than what you're going to end up paying Preston Smith, or vice versa, you know, pay Preston Smith and then draft a guy. So I think that's my only concern with it, is that they went so far one way. That doesn't necessarily preclude them also from taking another pass rusher in the draft. I mean, that's really one of those positions where you can never have too many of those guys. But just in terms of like, what was the best allocation of their resources? Is it to invest in two pass rushers on the same day? I'm not, that was my kind of big question about the moves that they made. And, but it was, you know, it was kind of fun to see because, you know, I think the Packers, you know, there was just, they got so much respect around the league for generations of the Packer way, and we draft and develop and we don't spend in free agency. And that's great if you're building teams that year after year are going to the playoffs or, you know, contending for a Super Bowl. But we haven't seen that from the Packers in quite a while. That draft and develop ways just hasn't been working as well as maybe it should. I mean, this is a league right now where you have to take advantage of free agency. And yes, you know, you can't strictly rely on free agency. And wasn't it the stat from last year that nobody who signed a free agent deal last year made the Pro Bowl? But you can impact your roster by making some big free agent, you know, or wise free agent signings should be the right way to say that. Wise free agent signings. So I like to see that they are doing a little bit of both. In this case, I would have liked to see them balance it out just a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think it'd be one thing if they didn't have draft picks, if this wasn't a great draft for pass rushers. I'd sit there and say, okay, well, you got to, you know, Clay Matthews and Nick Perry haven't worked out. You got to do something. Go in and bring in a guy. But to bring in two pass rushers when you have two first-round picks in a draft that is deep with edge-rushing talent, I mean, you can use your picks elsewhere, but I think, again, maybe take a shot on one of those guys. Maybe pick, you know, maybe play Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith off of one another and say, hey, whoever takes the smaller offer is the guy we're going to sign. I think you do that as opposed to, you know, now you can draft another pass rusher. That's true. But I think their cap is going to be in very rough shape in the years to come because a lot of those guys have very small year one contract figures and then are going to have larger contracts or larger cap hits in the years to come. So you're going to see a lot of changes for the Packers, I think, not this year, but then in 2020, excuse me, you're going to see guys who have been there for a while and who are effective, but we're not going to be part of that roster. And there's going to be a lot less flexibility to add talent. So basically, you know, Brian Gutekunst, I don't think he's going anywhere for a while. I think they're a very stable, sort of slow acting organization. But I mean, if these moves don't work, the Packers are going to find it difficult to make other changes with their roster. I think they're locked into kind of this core of talent right now for a while. And the guys they brought in, I mean, they have upside. They're young. They're all pretty much, you know, they haven't really emerged as like, you know, star level players, but they're getting paid like star level players. So outside of Amos, who I think is a very solid safety, they're doing a lot of projecting and they're paying a lot for guys who they're projecting to be worth those deals in the years to come.
Yeah, that's really what happened with this pass rush market this year, where, you know, we saw Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith and obviously Trey Flowers really cashing in because the elite mid-career pass rushers just don't hit the market because, you know, we saw all the guys who got their franchise tags. And the only way to get one of those guys is to potentially, you know, overpay a guy early in his career, banking on that he's going to have, you know, what Preston Smith's highest sack total is 8 sacks his rookie year back in 2015. I mean, you're banking that he's going to, that 8 will be his floor moving forward. Or you have to do what the San Francisco 49ers did and trade for a guy who has been franchise tagged to try to acquire a mid-career elite pass rusher like they did with Dee Ford.
Okay, let me ask you about the Chiefs. What's going on there? Because you figure when you have Patrick Mahomes, who's making a fraction of what he's worth, you add talent. You always want to, you know, surround your rookie quarterback with guys. And granted, they signed a bunch of people last year, but they've now cut Eric Berry, Justin Houston. They traded Dee Ford for a 2020 second round pick, not even a 2019 second round pick, with the argument being that he did not fit into Steve Spagnuolo's 4-3 scheme. Okay, I don't necessarily think that's the most logical thing, but that's fine. They signed Tyrann Mathieu. He gets an enormous contract, $14 million per year. What are they doing in terms of edge rushers? They don't have, like, they have Chris Jones, who's good on the interior, but he's not Aaron Donald. I mean, it doesn't sound like there's another move that has to happen here. And if there is, what do you think that move is? Who do they go for?
Yeah, I'm vigorously shaking my head here as you're talking about cutting a player like Dee, or trading a player like Dee Ford because he doesn't fit Steve Spagnuolo's defense. I'm just, it's baffling to me. But I understand the move to release Eric Berry at this point. I mean, it still is kind of stunning to see just because he has meant so much to that team. And at his prime, before he had those injuries over the last couple of years, he was such a tremendous player. But I get it. I get that he hasn't been able to play for you in 2 years. And you could not keep paying him the salary that he was owed, given his injury history and what you've just paid Tyrann Mathieu. I get that. I don't understand the Dee Ford move. I think that if you are a good defensive coach and you have a very good to great defensive player like Dee Ford is, you find a way to use him. You don't just say, oh, I run a 4-3. This guy doesn't fit. You find a way to make him fit. I mean, Von Miller in Denver has played in a 4-3 and a 3-4. You can move him a bunch of different kind of plays. You fit your scheme to your best players and not vice versa. So I don't love that they are already kind of making their personnel moves based on a defense that hasn't even been installed yet. I had that same question. I put it out there on Twitter the other day that, look, this is a deep draft of pass rush prospects, but the Chiefs aren't like loaded with first round picks.
No.
You know, it's not like you're going to be sitting there after, there's going to be a rush of them. You're going to be sitting there, you know, Thursday night of the draft, just waiting and waiting and waiting for your pick to come up and watching other teams take all of these pass rushers that you maybe really like. So unless you package other picks and put together picks to somehow move up to take one of these best guys in the draft, that's great. But, I think it's Breland. I mean, and Chris Jones is a really good defensive lineman.
Sure.
Like, I love Chris Jones, but he is not an edge rusher, and he needs guys around him. Looks like they're going to probably lose Alan Bailey, who was a nice kind of interior line compliment for him. But that's a really big question. I mean, I think you have to, it's one thing to invest in the back end, and they did that with Tyrann Mathieu. But if you are sacrificing your front seven to do that, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I had a lot of Chiefs fans that seemed angry that I was doubting whatever Brett Veach's plan was going to be at pass rusher. And they wouldn't release or trade Dee Ford without a plan. And sure, but if the plan is, well, we're just going to develop that through the draft, this is a team and an offense that should win the AFC Championship next year. They should be, I mean, I'm sure the Patriots will have something to say about that, but this is a team who we should expect to be in the AFC Championship game for the next several consecutive years. And you can't go back into a rebuilding defensive type of mode. And right now, I just don't know what that front seven looks like, basically outside of, you know, Chris Jones and Anthony Hitchens, right? I mean, that's not great.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. And I think Chiefs fans, it may work out, maybe great, but it's not like Steve Spagnuolo is Wade Phillips or Bill Belichick in terms of his defensive success. He has not been an especially good coordinator. So even though Bob Sutton probably should have been fired and was, and Chiefs fans are happy about that, I think if they don't make a move, if they don't add a pass rusher who is a legitimate star, not just like a guy in the second round, they didn't even get that extra second round pick in 2019 either. That's the other frustrating thing. But unless they add like You know, if they go out and get one of the franchise tag defensive ends, if they go out and trade for Jadeveon Clowney, okay. You had a plan, you got it. But I think otherwise, we're going to see. It's going to be very interesting. Let me finish up with this, Lindsay. Let me ask you one more thing here. In terms of the players who are still on the market as we record this at 2:30 Eastern on Thursday, is there one player you can think of who you think you're surprised is still out there and who you think is going to make a difference on the NFL team in 2019?
Yeah, let me look. I'm kind of surprised that Golden Tate hasn't signed
yet. That was one of the people I was thinking about for sure.
Yeah, who I've been kind of watching, and I know that there's a lot of teams that need wide receivers. And it hasn't been a crazy wide receiver market. You know, kind of some of those younger slot receivers went off the board early, and yeah, he's like now on the wrong side of 30, but I'm really surprised that he's still out there. Give me a couple other names. Who are we?
Golden Tate came to mind for me. I would say I would look also at Ndamukong Suh, who of course waited last year, ended up getting, you know, 1 year deal for $14 million or so. And it was very good. It wasn't like he was a problem in Los Angeles. He was a great player, seemed to get along really well. You know, teams need defensive tackles. It's not like teams suddenly don't need defensive linemen and pass rushers. So I was surprised he did not have more of a market. I haven't even heard anything yet about where he might be going or who's interested. I figured
he's just kind of a different dude. I'm not surprised that he's taking his time. Also, you know, he clearly doesn't need money.
Yes.
You know, hasn't he made like more money than any defensive player in NFL history at this point? So, yeah, I mean, I guess the other one is Ziggy Ansah is still out there. But he's a guy who it makes sense that he needs to take visits because there's going to be some health questions.
100%.
So he can get in. And he also, you know, his backstory, you know, he didn't play football until like his third year at BYU, where he came here as a Mormon missionary student, basically. So, you know, I think he maybe has a little bit more wanting to find out where he's going to be living and what his environment is going to be like. So taking visits will be important to him. But he's definitely like the best, I guess, pass rusher out there, Justin Houston, who we just talked about. But, you know, at this point now, it's mostly guys who are, they're out there for a reason because they are over 30. They have an injury. They have some sort of injury history. You know, so we're going to see some big names sign deals later, but nobody else out there that I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they haven't signed yet outside of Golden Tate, I would say.
I would say out of Blake Bortles as well. That's the one other person I would bring up to. Still in his prime. I'm intrigued. I will say, I am actually intrigued to see where Blake Bortles goes. Cause I think he is in some ways a joke, and I just made a joke, so I apologize to the Bortles family, but I think he is going to have a second life in the NFL. I don't think he's going to be like a full-time starter or anything, but there are going to be teams who value him as a backup with some upside because he isn't a good athlete. He wasn't a Jaguar scheme that was not necessarily playing with the most modern concepts. And I think there are going to be teams who see a guy who was a former third overall pick, who's a great athlete, strong arm, and they're going to say, hey, you know, we can mold this guy into something, even though we've seen him now for thousands of pass attempts not be very good at football.
Especially if you're a team that has, like, an aging starter. Tyrod Taylor signed with the Chargers yesterday, and the Chargers were a spot that, you know, a coworker and I were discussing this yesterday, that maybe Blake Bortles could have ended up there. He's obviously Gus Bradley connection, you know, Bradley there is their defensive coordinator. The Chargers have been looking, you know, half-heartedly looking, I think, for Rivers' eventual successor for a while now, and maybe that could have been a fit, but then they signed Taylor, so I guess maybe that's off the table now. But yeah, I mean, I think he will get a second life. Guys like Blake Bortles get second lives in the NFL that some of their quarterbacks do not, because by all accounts, he's a very, you know, likable guy, agreeable in the locker room, and really kind of could use some sort of a fresh start. So, yeah, he'll get another contract before some other quarterbacks that shall not be named on this podcast right now, because that would open up a whole new can of worms.
Yes, absolutely not. Well, Lindsay, people should check out your grades where?
At theathletic.com, Shiel Kapadia, who is another, I know, friend of your pod, and I have been divvying up all the grades, and now we're kind of diving into the second wave of free agency and trying to go back a little bit more of what exactly happened in the last week. What does this mean for the market, the future, all that kind of stuff? So we've got all of our grades, and then looking forward a little bit to kind of what's coming next.
And you're on social media as well.
Yes, by Lindsay H. Jones on Twitter, and that's where you can find all my stuff.
Awesome. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
All right. That's today's show, guys. Just so you know, we don't have a show next week. So if you don't see the show, don't get nervous. I'm still alive. I'm just not recording this show next week. We'll be back the week after. A lot more football stuff to come. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of free agency.